Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Feldman, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Feldman.
Okay, good to see everybody in, and as we've already found out here in the studio, we've got folks from various states. I'm almost afraid to mention them for fear I'll miss one, but we've got Colorado and Mississippi and Iowa. I guess I can call you folks Iowa more than Texas. Indiana, and where else? Thought we had another one yet someplace. But anyhow, we're always glad to have folks come in from a distance, and the rest of you here in the Tulsa area, we always appreciate so much that you come in and spend the afternoon with us. All right, we're just an informal Bible study, and we're just going to continue on the theme we've had now for the last several programs, picking out some of the unique but nows or but God or but when. And our next one is going to be in Ephesians chapter 2, and we're going to jump in at verse 11. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 11, and we're going to look at the but now in verse 13. And remember, our system of study has been, we're going to look at what goes before, what goes after, what are the circumstances that prompted these verses, and keeping all that in mind then as we pick this apart. All right, Ephesians chapter 2, starting in verse 11. Wherefore, remember that you being in times past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision, by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh made by hands, that at that time you, that is you Gentiles, were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope, without God in the world. Now our key verse. But now, in Christ Jesus, you, now remember who we're talking about, Gentiles, you Gentiles, who at one time were far off, are made nigh by the blood of Christ. In other words, it's a whole different program. All right, we're going to go back and see where it really began that God would deal with the nation of Israel solely on the basis of the covenant promises and the fact that they were a favored nation and that the rest of the race of humanity would go on without God. Now maybe we should recap a little bit. You want to remember that from Adam until Abraham, you had basically one race of people, the Adamic race. Even though they began to go into segments in the three sons of Noah, yet basically, so far as Scripture is concerned, it was one Adamic race until we get to Abraham. Now, I think I brought it out in my seminar up in Minnesota last week. Do you realize what a disaster that first 2,000 years was? Spiritually speaking, it was a disaster. From the time of Adam, you have that few believers in the line that replaced Abel in the line of Seth, and they were small in number. But after 1,600 years of human history, what was it? There was only a few people left that God could even use to build the ark. After 1,600 years, 8 believers. And I always emphasize, we have a doctrine of the remnant from cover to cover, but that's the smallest of all. 8 people out of probably 4 or 5 billion people on the planet. And then the next great event after the flood and the sons of Noah come along, 200 years later, you got another spiritual disaster, the Tower of Babel, wherein there was not a living soul that was not involved in the pagan false worship that arose around Nimrod and the Tower of Babel. Well, then we go another 2 years, and I maintain that there was not a believing soul left on earth, maybe Seth, but he was without any influence, and God calls out Abraham and begins then the nation of Israel. All right, so as soon as we start the nation of Israel, God lets the humanity go like old man river to the sea. And as we've already seen, without God, without a Messiah, without covenants, without hope, without God in the world. Now, don't ever come down on God and say you're not fair, because remember, those folks from Adam until Abraham had every opportunity to get right with God if they'd have wanted to. It wasn't that God didn't give them a chance, but they would not. And it's just like today. The numbers aren't much different. But humanity has never wanted to succumb to God's will. All right, now beginning then with Abraham and the nation of Israel, we have to delineate the human race into two segments. Now we're going to have the Jew and the Gentile. And of course, we know we're also going to have saved and lost. But for our lesson today, we're going to look at the two components, Jews on the one side, Gentiles on the other. All right, now I think we can go all the way back to Exodus and pick up pretty much the first time that we see God set Israel aside from the mainstream of humanity, that they are going to be a chosen nation, a favored nation, and they are going to be above all the other races of the world. Exodus chapter 11, and we'll just drop in at, let's see, I want to drop in at verse 6, honey. Exodus chapter 11, verse 6. Now remember, we're getting ready for the Exodus. Israel has been under bondage, and Moses had been brought back by an act of God to be their leader, to take them out. And so we're preparing for the first Passover. Exodus chapter 11, verse 6. And there shall be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as there was none like it, nor shall be like it any more. And of course, that was the night when death hit the firstborn of everything in Egypt. But now look, verse 7. Here we have the power of God separating the nation of Israel. But against any of the children of Israel shall not a dog move his tongue. Against man or beast, that you may know how that the Lord doth put a, what's the word, difference. God, starting here, is going to put a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. Now, never forget that. Here, before they even come out and are set apart as a nation of people, God has indicated that there's going to be a line of demarcation between the nation of Israel and the rest of the Gentile world. And that will carry all the way on through, even to the time of Paul and the Apostle of Grace. That up until Paul is designated to go to the Gentile, everything is going to be primarily to the nation of Israel. All right, now let's just come over a few pages, still in Exodus, and let's come over to chapter 19. Now, these are all things that we've hit before. It's a lot of review, but my goodness, I think we get at least one letter a day where it just admonishes us, repeat and repeat and repeat. Lest don't ever stop repeating. So bear with me for those of you who have been with me so long that we do. We repeat, and I'm aware of that. I usually tell my Oklahoma classes, don't accuse me of senility. I'm not quite senile yet. I repeat purposely because that's what it takes. All right, Exodus 19. And again, we usually like to drop in at verse 3 so that you get the situation. Israel is out of Egypt. They've come through the Red Sea, and they're gathered around Mount Sinai by their tribes in complete organization, remember. And now Moses goes up into Mount Sinai to confer with the Lord. Verse 3. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel. Now this is what God is telling Israel. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bear you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, since God has dealt with them so intrinsically, now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then you, the nation of Israel, don't lose sight who we're talking about, then you, the nation of Israel, shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people. Now, where does that put the Jew? Head and shoulders above all the other races of the world by divine decree. And they can scoff and scorn at this all they want. This book is sure. And it's true. And we can trust it. All right? Why could God do it? He gives us a reason. Next statement. For all the earth is mine. It's His. Now, one of my listeners reminded me that I use the word sovereign quite often, and the word sovereign isn't in the book. I didn't realize that. But that doesn't bother me a bit because I still use it correctly. Sovereign just simply means He's in total control. Well, this says the same thing. I can do whatever I want to do because I am sovereign. The earth is mine. Fair enough? All right, now then, in light of that, as we looked at not too many programs back, since God has now chosen this nation to be above all the other nations and tribes in the world, they are there for a particular role. And that comes up in verse 6, that they are now to be a kingdom of priests, a holy or a set-apart nation, and these are the words that thou shalt speak to the children of Israel. Now there is where we have that demarcation then between Israel and the rest of the Gentile world. Now by definition, never forget that the Jew is always that race or nation of people that are connected to and came out of the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the 12 tribes. That's the nation of Israel. Everybody else, the Arab world out of Ishmael and Esau, all the other Africans, the Orient, the Europeans, whatever their station in life, they're Gentiles. So what's a Gentile? Someone who's not a Jew. And who's a Jew? Someone that comes from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, always keep that distinction. Now, as we saw in Ephesians then, the Jews put another nomenclature on it. They called the Gentile world the uncircumcised, and they referred to themselves as the circumcised. Now, there again, keep that distinction clear, because not too long ago, I heard a preacher claiming that the uncircumcision was just simply a reference to the unsaved, and the circumcision a recognition of the saved. Hogwash. That is totally destroying the definition. The uncircumcised is the non-Jewish world, because even the Arab world practices circumcision. I trust you know that. The Muslim world practices circumcision. But that doesn't make them a Jew. It doesn't take them out of the category of Gentiles. And so always keep those terms perfectly clear in your mind. All right, now then, since the Gentiles all the way up through Israel's history were devoid of any of the spiritual promises given to Israel, that does not mean that God had completely forgotten about the Gentile world. Now come up with me to Isaiah 42, and we'll see that God still has a program for the Gentile world. But until it's time for Him to turn to the Gentiles, He's going to deal only with the children of Israel. Now then, the law was explicit that the Jews were to have nothing to do with the Gentile world around them. And of course, the main reason being that the Gentiles, beginning back there 200 years before Abraham, were already steeped in idolatry and mythology, and God knew that if Israel did not maintain their separation, it wouldn't be long and they would be embracing all the gods of the Gentile world, which of course happened. But that was His reason. You stay clear of these Gentiles, lest you fall into the trap of their idols and their idolatry. But, on the other hand, we always have to realize God has still got a program out in the future for these pagan Gentiles. Isaiah 42, and just drop in right at verse 1. Isaiah 42, verse 1. Now, this is written, of course, about 700 years before Christ. Behold my servant, whom I uphold, my elect, in whom my soul delighteth. So we're talking about a person. And of course, the person is the Messiah, the Christ. I have put my spirit upon him. He, Israel's Messiah, shall bring forth judgment or righteous rule to what people? The Gentiles. See? No, God hasn't forgotten about them, but they cannot come into the covenant promises. It is utterly against the mind of God. The covenants were given only to the nation of Israel. All right, maybe keep your hand in 42. Before we read another verse in Isaiah, I'm going to jump you all the way up to Acts chapter 19. Just to show you that the Jews never forgot that this was God's program for their nation. And here we come to a point in time about 7 years after Pentecost. Did I say 19? 11. 11:19. I'm sorry. Chapter 11, verse 19. But keep your hand in Exodus. I'm going back. Or Isaiah. We're going back there. Acts 11:19. 7 or 8 years after Pentecost. After most of Christendom thinks that Christianity has already begun, 7 years later. No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't. Scripture flies in the face of that concept. And here's one of my favorite verses. Acts 11:19. Now they who were scattered abroad upon the persecution that arose around Stephen. Now stop and think. Who were they? Well, the Jewish believers up there in the Jerusalem church who had not left off law-keeping. They're still temple-worshipping. They're still keeping the Jewish law of Saturday Sabbath, the food laws. But they had embraced Jesus of Nazareth as the Messiah. They had become adherents of the kingdom gospel. And then when Saul of Tarsus came in and began that intense persecution, followed by others, of course, those Jewish believers had to flee for their life. But they're still Jews, and they're still tied to the Jewish law, but they had accepted Christ as Messiah. All right, now these are the Jews that we're talking about in Acts 11. All right, read on again. Verse 19. Now they who were scattered abroad upon the persecution that arose around Stephen traveled as far as Phoenix, out to the island of Cyprus, up to Antioch in Syria. Now watch it. Preaching the word to none but Jew only. Oh, people don't want to buy that. They don't want to believe that. But that's what the book says. They would not even approach a Gentile, but only Jews. Now, you remember, there's no New Testament. So what was the word? The Old Testament. So on the basis of the Old Testament scriptures, they were still trying to convince their fellow Jews that this Jesus of Nazareth, as Peter preaches in Acts 2, 3, and 4, that this Jesus whom they crucified was the promised Christ. That was the whole thrust of their message. All right, so since they had no concept of going to the Gentile, I've got to bring you back to Isaiah to show that God did, but it was going to be in his own time. God did. All right, back to Isaiah 42. Now, verse 6. Now, got it? Isaiah 42, verse 6. I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness. I will hold thy hand and keep thee. Now, who are we talking about? The nation of Israel. We're talking about the Messiah up in verse 1. But now we're talking about the nation of Israel. All right, I will keep thee and give you for a covenant of the people. For what purpose? For a light to the Gentiles. See? God hasn't forgotten about the Gentile world, but it was going to be in his own time. All right, now we can jump all the way up into Christ's earthly ministry. Chapter 9 of Matthew. Matthew chapter 9. And as I mentioned in my class Monday night, the best way to understand the setting and the scenario of the four Gospels is to realize it's just an extension of the Old Testament. Nothing has changed except that now the Messiah is in their midst that all the Old Testament has been talking about for 2,000 years. That's all. They're still going to the temple. They're still bringing sacrifices. They're still going to Saturday synagogue. Nothing has changed, but the Messiah is now in their midst. And what's he proclaiming? That I'm the promised king. See? Matthew chapter 9, verse 35. And Jesus went about all the cities and the villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Not the gospel of grace, the gospel of the kingdom. And with it, he was healing every sickness among the people and every disease. All right, but now come across to chapter 10, a verse that I use over and over to make this point, that you cannot bring the Gentiles into God's economy until we get to that other apostle, because Scripture won't allow it. All right, here it is. He's just chosen the 12, named them. Now drop down to verse 5. These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go not into the way of the Gentiles. Go not into the way of the Gentiles. And into any city of the Samaritans, who were half-breeds. They were half-Jew and half-Syrian. And into any of the Samaritans enter you not. Why? Go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now, you can't make it any plainer in any words of English that I know that they were to have nothing to do with the Gentile world. Just like coming out of Egypt, they were to have nothing with the Egyptians. They were to have nothing to do with the Canaanites. And all the way up through the Old Testament, Israel was not to have any kind of social intercourse with the world around them. They were not to intermarry. They were not to get involved in their religion, because God wanted to keep them unto himself. All right, now let's see when all of a sudden something drastically different happens. And now, for sake of time, we'll go all the way up to Acts chapter 9. Remembering what Jesus just told the 12, go not to a Gentile. In keeping with all the Old Testament covenants, have nothing to do with the Gentile. Now look what God does. Out of the blue. And this is what most of Christendom cannot see. Out of the blue, he's going to do something totally different. And I'm going to take you all the way past his conversion experience up to where the Lord is addressing Ananias in the city of Damascus. And Ananias, according to Acts 22, was a devout Jew according to the law. He was just like the Jerusalem church. He was a Jew who was a law-keeping Jew, but he had embraced Jesus of Nazareth as his Messiah. All right, now to this man, Ananias, who is scared to death when he heard that old Saul of Tarsus was coming to Damascus, and we can pick that up all the way back in... Well, let's go back to verse 10, honey, of chapter 9. Acts chapter 9, verse 10. So we pick up the flow here. We've had Saul confronted on the road to Damascus up there in verse 4 and 5. But now drop down to verse 10. While Saul is being stricken out on the road outside the city gate, in the city there was a certain disciple at Damascus named Ananias. Now, whenever I see that word disciple, I always have stopped, because I think the mentality of most believers or church people, the disciple is one of the 12. We're not talking about the 12. When the word is used in this vein, it's simply a follower. So this Ananias was a follower of Jesus of Nazareth. See? All right, so this Ananias a disciple at Damascus, and to him the Lord said in a vision, Ananias? And Ananias said, Behold, I am here, Lord. And the Lord said unto him, Arise, and go into the street which is called Straight, inquire in the house of Judas for one called Saul of Tarsus, for behold, he prayeth, and hath seen in a vision a man named Ananias coming in, putting his hand on him, that he might receive his sight. Now watch Ananias' response. Then Ananias answered, Lord, I have heard by many of this man how much evil he hath done to the saints at Jerusalem. And here, that is in Damascus, he has authority from the chief priest to bind all that call on thy name. But the Lord said unto him, Go thy way, for he, Saul, is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the what? Gentiles. Now listen, I've emphasized it before and I'll repeat it again. To the Jew of Saul's day and of Saul's caliber, that word Gentile was as foul a word as you could spit off your lip. And yet it's to that people that this man is going to be sent, contrary to everything he had ever heard before. Can you imagine how the man must have felt? And again, I think I always have to rehearse with people, why were the Jews so despising of these Gentiles? Well, you got to remember, only the nation of Israel had been given the laws of personal hygiene. The Jews knew personal hygiene, the Gentiles, nothing. The Jews knew the perfect food laws, cleanliness, and all that went with it. The Jews had a biblical morality, of course, based on the law, the Ten Commandments. The Gentiles had none of that. They were pagan. They were idolaters. They were worshiping the gods and goddesses of mythology. And it just flew in the face of a good Jew. Now, do you get the picture? Jesus said, Go not to a Gentile, to the 12. But to this man, he says, I am sending you far hence to the Gentile world.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.